This is The Rich Eisen Show
with guest host Tom Pelissero.
You said the first item up for bids involved the Bears.
Live from The Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Caleb's first game in Roma Dunze and the Bears faithful showing up. Maybe you put them in Detroit.
Today's guests: senior writer for NBA.com, Steve Ashburner; ESPN staff writer, Dan Murphy; free agent wide receiver, Jarvis Landry; NFL Network insider, Ian Rappaport. And now, sitting in for Rich, it's Tom Pelissero.
Welcome into the Rich Eisen List Show. I am Tom Pelissero, back in my favorite seat in television, right here in studio with my boys, TJ Jefferson, Chris Brockman, Mike Del Tufo. Great to see you guys. Live in the flesh. I mean, I saw you last week in Detroit.
It's true. It's true.
It hasn't been that long, but it's been a while since I've been right here. We got a packed show for you today. We've got Steve Ashburner from NBA.com going to join us, break down all the tentacles of everything happening right now in the NBA. Kevin Durant's out. LeBron is out. We'll get into all of that. Jarvis Landry, five-time Pro Bowl wide receiver, going to join the show as well. He's going to try out at the Jaguars rookie camp this weekend after being out last season. A lot to get into with Jarvis, including, you know, all those LSU guys who once again went in the first round. Why is that not enough for the Tigers to be a factor in the national playoff race? We'll talk to him. Ian Rappaport going to be on the show as well. We're also going to get into the ESPN.com story. Dan Murphy, one of their staff writers, is going to join the show talking about what could be progress toward a massive shift in the landscape of college athletics, settling one of the major lawsuits right now that is holding some things up in terms of athletes getting paid. But I want to start out, we'll talk plenty of NFL throughout the course of the show. I'm now into the real offseason, which is post-draft, and the Lakers. Also in the real offseason. I sensed the pall over the studio this morning. A lot of deep sadness among you guys.
Del Tufo was pouring one out for Laker car flags. May they rest in peace for the next 9 months. Look, man.
People who watch this show know there's no real sadness.
There's no sadness, TJ. And you know what?
That was the joke.
It's Denver's world, and we're just living in it, man. Like
Nuggies.
Inevitable, but why don't you explain that again with those inevitable Nuggies?
I wouldn't say inevitable.
Yeah. You calling an upset in the next round against the T-Wolves?
Ooh. If you watch the Timberwolves right now, and you watch the Nuggets, I mean, the Nuggets trailed most of that series against the Lakers. I don't know that you look at the Nuggets as being an invincible team, do you? Jamal Murray made it happen last night on a strained calf. Made a couple of big shots.
Were they losing the whole series, or were they just, lying?
Going through the paces, knowing that this is going to be easy
going
enough.
Going through the motions, and then with 5 minutes to go, we'll turn it on and beat you.
You got the absolute, that was LeBron fighting for his life last night and in game four, too. This was not a, hey, I know I'm done. This is a, I know I've only got so many shots at this. He wouldn't say after the game exactly what the future was. There's a lot of, let's play actually LeBron last night. He's asked about his future with the Lakers and in the NBA. Let's go ahead and play that right now.
Couldn't be any closer to when you just got off the floor, but have you given any initial thought to what comes next this summer for next season?
No, I just want to get home to the family, honestly. Start looking at the schedule, obviously. I got, my son, one of my boys is just trying to decide if he's going to, enter the draft or go back to school. I got another kid that's playing AU ball right now. My daughter's playing volleyball, and my wife is doing so many great things, so it's about family right now. And then in a couple months, I got to go to Vegas for training camp. So, I got to rest my body for USAB, but that's kind of the initial thoughts.
Tonight, was there any thought at all that, this could have been your last game with the Lakers?
I'm not going to answer that.
All right, first of all, I don't believe for a second LeBron has not thought about the future. Everything in his entire adult life has been calculated in terms of where he's going to be playing. Everyone knew he was going to the Lakers a year in advance. The decision was on national TV. He's 100% figured out what he wants to do. Mm-hmm. The Bronny James component in this, I find fascinating for a variety of reasons. For one, I know he had the heart condition. Mm-hmm. He missed time. He came back. Wasn't necessarily himself. Well, he averaged a couple points a game, right?
Yep.
In his college season.
Yeah, mostly a role player. Just kind of finding his way out there. Just lucky to be out there, I think, to be honest. But then, you know, a lot of people have thoughts on him on if he can. I mean, LeBron didn't do him any favors by saying, look, he's better than, you know, X amount of players in the league right now. It's like, okay. But it's a big question mark.
If you're the Lakers, are you going down this road for another 3 years? It's a max extension for LeBron James. You don't know if he's got 3 years left, but if you're going to bring him back, say he opts out of his contract, which based on the people who actually report on the NBA, which is not me, sounds likely that it goes that direction. Do you bring him back, draft his son, and think the product that you saw on the court during the playoffs and throughout the course of the season when you're a, what, 43, 45 win team, and then get into the playoffs and give the Nuggets a run, but weren't able to go over the top. Do you go further and double down on an old roster? Anthony Davis is locked up for like 4 more years. Do you double down on that and give LeBron the kid? And, or if you're the Lakers at some point, do you just say, we're good? You're still the Lakers. Yeah. You're going to be the biggest story in the NBA. We're going to be talking about you whether you have LeBron or not. Do you go down there from a competitive basketball-only standpoint? Do you continue to double down on it and say, if LeBron wants me back, we want him back?
That, I mean, Tom, that's such an excellent question. You know, when Kobe got his big money, created a little bit of controversy, right? Some people were like, yeah, we're giving this for everything he's done and accomplished for us. But other fans are looking at this like, wow, this is going to like handcuff us going forward. And it did for a few years. So that's an excellent question. We've never seen a player at this age do the things that LeBron's capable of doing. And look, does he have 3 more years in him? I wouldn't bet against him. I don't know about this high. Like, look, he had a great season for a 39-year-old player. We've never seen somebody put numbers up like this before. But you're right, 3 more years, man, you're risking a lot by doing that, and I'm glad I don't have to make the decision.
Are they serious about winning? That's the question.
Or are they just comfortable with it's LeBron James, it's
or
the show.
Or do they want the star
it's
power
the
and the show and all the headlines that go with it?
So, Chris, I'm glad you said that, bro, because that's how I feel about the Cowboys, as you know right now. Sometimes I'm like, are they really that concerned about winning? Right. Or do we like the fact that we're the most valuable franchise and we're the lead block on every show, whether we deserve to or not, and the prestige? So what you said, I think
Lakers gave Kobe Bryant all that money in the last 2 years of his career, and you know what it got him? 38 combined wins in 2 years. Mm-hmm. Are the Lakers serious? I would say they've probably maxed out as good as they can be. But look, they made the Western Conference Finals last year. Seems like that was kind of a fluke. And so in the other years, first round exits.
Or they didn't make it at all.
If you're the Cowboys, you at least can say you're taking strides forward. Now, they play an abysmal game at home against the Packers in the playoffs last year. But at least you can say from Mike McCarthy's first year through last season, in terms of the win total, in terms of the level at which Dak is playing, Mike McCarthy calling the plays last year, Dak got that much better. It was a complete disaster from every angle in the playoff game. Yeah. There's nothing you could do about it. But it's not like the Lakers got out here and they had won 60 games and then lost in 5 in the playoffs. No, this was a team that was limping toward the playoffs.
Good point.
And then go out in 5 games, gave the Nuggets a hard time, but still weren't able to close those games. It's just, it's hard, I think, when you're talking about building winning franchises here to mix in the idea of, like you guys said, the branding aspect of it. Are you happy that, well, no matter what, we put the star on somebody's helmet, they're going to be able to make all the marketing money, we're going to be highly valuable, we're going to be the centerpiece of the show all the time. The Lakers are always going to be the centerpiece of the show.
Yep.
If they go into a rebuild, yeah, are they on national TV lists? Sure. Is every single show talking about them like we are right now every single day? Maybe not to that same degree. I think that, I mean, something has to change for the Lakers. It, in all likelihood, involves Darvin Ham no longer being the head coach. That's the simplest solution. But I don't know that that fixes. Getting rid of Darvin Ham doesn't suddenly, you know, make LeBron James into Benjamin Button and he starts getting younger and playing better.
It's not going to help D'Angelo Russell make a shot. Like getting rid of the coach.
Did you see D'Angelo Russell's comments after the game last night?
No.
Hell of a season for D'Angelo. Went third person. hell of a season. Said, as long as, I'm paraphrasing only slightly here, it's as long as my family and friends texted me saying what a great job I did, that's all I need.
Oh.
So that's good.
I mean, I guess in the big scheme of things, he's right. But in the sports world scheme of things, probably
the Rich Eisen Show's ratings are tanking. But you know what? Rich's great. Family and friends are saying, you're doing a good job, champ.
Great job.
That's all that.
Great jacket, Tom. You know what I mean?
That's all that really matters. You like this one today, Tom?
I do.
You guys like the casual jackets. I thought about going suit.
No,
I got to go over to NFL Network and be on TV tonight.
We'll have the casual jackets.
But I figured you wouldn't like it.
No, we're not a suit.
Love the casual Tom.
And on top of that, there was also, I got so much flack from you guys. I think I was on for 15 minutes or so in Detroit, which 5 minutes was about not wearing socks. I am wearing socks.
Yeah, that's my question. You got socks today?
They're just low socks. They're low socks, but also the inseam in the jeans is not as aggressive as the inseam in my suits.
I'm not going to player hate, but I think the bigger issue was the inseam of your pants. Like, it wasn't that you weren't wearing socks. Is that we were seeing a lot of ankle and a lot of high ankle. You know what I mean? Like, if you had a high ankle sprain, we would have seen the bruise, the brace. We would have seen everything.
My suit guys would tell you I don't have the highest inseam either. Like, if they had their way, you would see, even when I'm standing,
more.
You'd see just a little bit of ankle. I like like the pants to at least touch the top of the shoe if I'm standing.
Right.
I don't like the high water.
Right.
You know, basically capri.
Right. We're not digging clams.
But when I said the summer, Mike, you're gonna get a little bit of leg. Okay. I think that's fair. I don't think that's the worst thing.
Maybe a pre-draft spray tan would have been something you could have just penciled in there. You know what I mean?
There is that issue of because, you know, right now, like, this is very I got makeup here at the studio. This is very natural. When I do it myself, which is, you know, if I'm on TV 200 days a year, 180 days.
Home cam?
I'm on my home cam in my basement, and it's me going, and we're done. And that's it. The extent of the effort that I put into it. But also, I can tell I use the same whatever, foundation/powder every time, regardless of the time of year. So in the winter, changing my entire skin tone because it's the same stuff I would wear in the summer. Which I initially had when I started NFL Network in July of 2017, they matched the makeup to that. And that was not the right look by December at all. So I downgraded by one spot, but it's still off. And there's one camera guy, Steve Van Osdale in Minneapolis, who his big thing is always Tom. Meaning, before I go on TV, I have to take the makeup and put it on my hands. Because when I'm holding the microphone... It doesn't look too bad right now. When I'm holding the microphone, you will get a white hand with a different colored face.
A darker face. So maybe the trick last week would have been...
Get someone to do the ankles.
A little makeup on the ankles. You know what I mean?
Think CC would have had a problem with that. Can you also just get down there and just do the ankles? I need about the mid-calf because I intend to cross my legs on this show. There was a lot that happened in that draft week, man. There was all the talk about... You know, the trades that could happen up at the top. We didn't get a ton of those. They happened more so later on in round one and then at the top of the second round, which is a phenomenon that's really taken place over the last handful of years here when they went to the 3-day draft to really extend this thing and make sure 800,000 people are in the streets of Detroit, which was awesome. It was very cool, especially because when the draft actually begins, I'm on all day leading up to it. I'm not on during the actual draft. So I'm leaving right as everybody's pushing forward. Like, this is, you know, the Metallica Guns N' Roses tour in 1992. And they're shoving forward and making sure that they're up front. So in case Axl's voice goes out after 20 minutes, because he's been sucking down Marlboros and drinking scotch right up until he goes on stage and doing Knocking on Heaven's Door. I leave right then. And so I get to just watch it from afar. I know that it was a little complicated for people to get out, for even the people who were on our draft broadcast to get back to the hotel.
Man.
But it was very cool. But part of the phenomenon that's happened since they went to that 3-day draft is everybody gets to recalibrate after round one. And I had a GM calling me on Friday morning, complained about it, just saying we're, you know, the old school people are used to how it used to be, which was you were ready to roll through three rounds. So you just kept going. Now, the thinking is the GMs who aren't as prepared, the teams who aren't as prepared, get this time to go, okay, now what do we do? They only have to think through 32 picks on the first night. So what do you see? 33, the pick is made.
by the Panthers, but then 34, there's a trade, and 35, there's a trade, because teams are sitting there looking at their board and going, okay, here's where our strategy is going to be. But we didn't get the trades up at the top, and I want to dig into this later on in the show, because there's so many stories. Six quarterbacks in the first 12 picks.
Crazy.
Never happened before. I believe that six picks, I said it on this show in Detroit, I believe that six quarterbacks were going to go in round one. Realistically, it seemed unlikely they'd all be off the board by number 12.
Wild.
But every single one of those picks, there's a story behind it, and the conversations that took place, and the way that they scouted that position. I do want to get into all that as we roll along in the show. We got a lot more NFL content to come as well. We've got Jarvis Landry again. He's going to come up on the show. He's great breaking everything down around the NFL. Ian Rapoport also will be here. So some tales from the NFL draft that was.
Love it.
In 2024, last week in Detroit. We'll get into all of that. But let's resume the NBA conversation on the other side of this with somebody who knows a lot more than me, quite frankly. Steve Ashburner, longtime NBA writer, NBA.com. He joins the Rich Eisen Show right after this.
Hey, folks. It's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep. Because if I don't have one, I'm just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Our house is a mess. Come on in.
I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
I don't know if you're aware, but you going to Yale was brought up on game two of the NBA Finals.
No way.
Yes, because...
Was it the part where the Cavs were really losing at the end?
No, it's not that. It's not that. No. It's that Jeff Van Gundy, who was on the broadcast, said he went to school with you.
No way.
In a class. Do you...
Sorry, Jeff. Don't remember you. You weren't that memorable.
Oops. You don't remember Jeff Van Gundy
in class? I'm afraid I don't.
Because the reverse is true.
No. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I don't.
Your phone wasn't lighting up from friends saying,
no, hey. I wish I'd seen him. I would have been able to see his face and maybe, you know. But
well,
I mean,
I think we could. Can we bring up a picture of Jeff Van Gundy? I don't know. So just stroll down memory lane here. Well, the one in the middle is Jeff Van Gundy. Does that ring a bell to you?
That rings no bell whatsoever. I'm so sorry, Jeff.
No class reunions at all with Dean Jody Foster and Jeff Van Gundy. Okay.
We noticed you mentioned on the air that you were classmates with Jody Foster at Yale.
Yeah, and then you cheap shotted me afterwards.
No, I don't know. I don't know
about cheap. You brought her on and just feigned total indifference to my existence in the world. It was a setup. I mean, our freshman year, there was 12 guys on the floor. We all threw in $100 and said, hey, the first guy that gets a date with Jody Foster, you win the money. I'm coming back from the gym in the early fall, and there's a candy shop right outside the big quad for freshmen. The popcorn is popping. It smells great. And from behind me, someone goes, man, that popcorn smells good. And I turn around, and it's her. And I totally choke, and I say, yeah, yeah. And I run to my dorm, right? I was scared. I was intimidated by her.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. I am sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger with supplies and solutions for every industry. Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. If you have not noticed, I'm not Rich Eisen. I am Tom Pelissero in for Rich today. Do we know what Rich is, what he's doing? Is he just
Rich is just in New York for the business. Roku New Front.
New Front.
Ooh. A new front, not an upfront?
Yeah. For streaming, it's new front. Yeah. We were explaining that yesterday. Yeah.
Why is it not just still upfront?
Not in charge, Tom. I don't know what the phrasing is. That's what we're calling it.
Yeah, that's what we were told.
I mean, a new front isn't a thing. An upfront is a thing.
No.
Like, that's a word.
New front is a thing.
It's a thing now.
But new front is not a word.
It is now.
Why not?
It is now.
It's new front.
Upfront. Like, I'm being upfront with you.
Right. Yeah. New, it's two words. It's not one word. It's two words. New front. It's a new front.
It's a front, Tom.
Is it new spelled N-U?
Oh, that was
like Roku or new metal?
That's
a good question.
The new front.
By the way, I don't hate that.
I don't hate it either.
Or the coup front? No?
The coup front?
Anything?
I don't hate that.
No, that I like your N-U, though.
You mentioned this in the break. I brought up the Guns N' Roses Metallica tour. I don't even remember what I was talking about or why.
I don't know where you pulled that from, by the way.
That's like my image if I'm thinking like the biggest concerts of all time. And I was not there. I was like 11 years old at the time. But you actually were there. You saw that tour.
1982, Three Rivers Stadium.
92.
Pittsburgh. 92. What did I say?
Those were the days.
82.
Oh, I said 82?
Guns N' Roses formed in 85.
I don't know what TJ is, so it could have been 82.
Shut up. It definitely was.
Whoa. That was aggressive.
But 1992, Three Rivers Stadium. Faith No More opened. Metallica, then Guns N' Roses. It rained. It was great. I'm not a big concert person, and that was like the first rock concert I'd ever seen, but I'm willing to go out on a limb and say that was probably the greatest concert I've ever seen in my life.
Because every story is that Metallica played just forever, and they were opening, right?
Yeah,
before Guns N' Roses.
Opened, but then, Metallica, I guess, was they came second, but Guns N' Roses, they finished the show. So,
but this is the two biggest bands on earth.
Yeah,
this would be... Yeah. I don't know, Taylor Swift and another Taylor Swift. I don't even know if there'd be a second one that you'd put in the same category at the time. Maybe Steve Ashburner
saw that
tour as well. Steve Ashburner joining the show right now. Ash, great to have you here. Great to see your face here on the Rich Eisen Show. Last night, we talked about it at the top of the show. The Lakers are done. All the questions that arise out of this just... Break down the totality of what the Lakers are facing right now with the future of LeBron, the future of Darvin Ham, the future of that entire team.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me on. It's a LeBron offseason, which is usually filled with as much or more drama than the regular season. He has an option to come back and play for the Lakers next season. I know that's what the sort of made that question at the post-game presser mandatory. You have to at least say, try to test what the guy is thinking. And but he's going to use that for leverage. He'll try to improve the roster, make sure that gets done. I would imagine if he's unhappy with Darvin Ham, we'll see a change there. If he's happy with Darvin Ham, then, then you keep the coach. But yeah, he's at a point in his career where he's not going to, he's not going to wait for things to happen. He's going to use his leverage to make things happen. And he's always been able to do it before. No reason now, heading towards 40, that would change.
Where would he go, Ash? If it's not the Lakers, and if he decides at age 39 going on 40, he wants to continue to play, where else, if anywhere, would even make sense and would it be doable for LeBron to go there?
Well, if he were to leave, I think the smoothest PR landing he would have would be to go back to Cleveland. If Donovan Mitchell wants out of there and LeBron could go back in there, and that is his team, his franchise, essentially. It's not seen when he goes, when he went to Cleveland the last time, he was returning home. And it would be, I think, looked at that again the same way. It wouldn't be he's out, stalking one more ring. So, that would be, and it could make some sense. you know, I'm not paying any attention or any mind here to all the numbers and what would have to happen payroll wise and this and that. But as far as him going somewhere, I heard it suggested on radio this morning that Philadelphia to go play with Joel Embiid might make sense if there was a way for, you know, the Lakers to get some fair return or at least some future by moving LeBron that way. Or if LeBron just signed, you know, outright, I mean, I think Philadelphia could have enough money to satisfy that need. So if he just didn't exercise his player option and went to a place like Philadelphia, I mean, you know, has he played with a big, the caliber of Joel Embiid, another MVP? But I think other than that, I mean, you could see him in a Golden State or Dallas or somewhere like that. But I think it would be looked at a little bit like Kevin Durant's move to what Golden State was. Now, Golden State is not the same team it was that Kevin Durant jumped onto. But nonetheless, for LeBron to roll the dice on one of 30 or one of 29 other franchises and think that's where he's going to get his ring, I think there needs to be more to it than that.
So the Lakers and LeBron decisions to make there. There's also decisions to make in Phoenix. They build a team that's around Kevin Durant and bringing in Bradley Beal. And obviously you've got Devin Booker there to get swept and not even be particularly competitive, Ash. And a lot of that series against the Timberwolves, you look at the way that their salary is set up here and the money that they've got committed. Where do the Suns go from here in this offseason?
Well, and the lack of draft capital, right. the ability to improve and bring in some affordable contracts. It's a mess. They were built badly. I mean, it was sort of an old school kind of a build. It reminded me of the first year of the Miami Heat super team, where they brought those guys in, but they really weren't prepared to pay for that right away. And so they ended up with a very thin bench, complimentary players that didn't really complement, and they got the three stars in the door. But I think they had more maneuverability in Miami to flesh out that roster in the coming years. They made it to the finals that first year and then got beat by Dallas. And then they won a couple of championships after that. Dwayne Wade took a step back, and there was not that sort of fight for supremacy with the ball. Phoenix, it was just an old model, I think. I think they were reaching for something that didn't make sense even on paper if you looked at those three stars. I mean, Devin Booker, even, you know, Durant and Beal were saying, you know, he's got to be the guy. He's our alpha. And Durant, obviously, is still a potent scorer, dangerous player, tough matchup. That made sense. But Bradley Beal, after the injuries he'd had, after the sort of a one-dimensional career that he's had, it didn't fit well. And certainly his salary, what's owed to him on his contract, does not fit well. Not having a point guard, it still matters. They talk about this as positionless, the positionless era, and we're supposed to pick all NBA teams that way. Well, you know what? Point guards do matter. If you think of that roster with Chris Paul on it, as opposed to Beal or Booker trying to bring the ball up and organize the offense. And, you know, you do need somebody to say no, as they like to say, to guys who are not as open or ready to receive the ball as they think they are. I just think that was bad roster construction. And, Frank Vogel or somebody else might pay a price for that, but it really was a front office gaffe the way they built that team.
Steve Ashburner is with us, senior writer for NBA.com. Ash, the last time the Timberwolves won a playoff series, I was a part-timer at KFAN Radio in Minneapolis going to those games where they were facing the Kings and the Nuggets. That's 20 years ago. I believe you might have still been on the Star Tribune beat at that point, or you at least covered the team in that era. I mean, it has been forever since the Timberwolves were a relevant basketball team. But gosh, you watch them in the opening round game against the Suns. You watch Anthony Edwards almost single-handedly close them out in game four. It seems like this is real. It seems like the way that they've put together that team, you talk roster construction and all the questions when they made the big trade for Rudy Gobert and how are he and Karl Anthony Towns going to coexist. It's working right now, and they've got some of the bright young stars in this league.
Yeah, no doubt. It's a fun story. I was on the beat back in 2004 when they won their only two playoff series and then got beat in the Western Conference Finals. Until two nights ago, I was the only Minneapolis beat writer who had ever covered that team and had seen them win a series. So I've suddenly got more company, and that's good. Things change. I mean, I think that Rudy Gobert trade was properly criticized last year because of, we got it, the period of adjustment and all, but whether you could make that work, you know, in today's game. And the jury was out until this season, and they did make it work. So, you know, kudos to them. They changed the narrative on that. They took a negative and made it into a positive. Karl Anthony Towns has accepted, and I'm not sure he had a ton of choice in this, but he accepted a role that's different from being the dominant, low-post, offensive-minded big. He's more of a complementary player now to open things up and to exploit some mismatches. Gobert's defense has proven real. There are a lot of Victor Wembanyama backers who want him to immediately get the Defensive Player of the Year award, and I don't see that happening. I think Rudy Gobert is going to win his fourth. His impact, his reputation dissuades a lot of guys from even going into the paint, and that's can be as effective as swatting a shot. So, and Anthony Edwards, yeah, I mean, he's taken step by step. I think he still needs, you know, some maturity, but he's 22. He hasn't been as consistent. He certainly wasn't during the regular season. He didn't crack my MVP ballot because of that, but he's right on the fringes, sixth, seventh. He's got all the skills, and he's got, I think, the will and the personality to, you know, be a real assassin out there. Great nature with media, and, you know, the Timberwolves, you know, and this happened before Tim Connelly and the current, regime, but they drafted him number one, and it was a very prescient pick.
In classic T-Wolves fashion, there's always got to be some drama. I don't think many fans even have a concept of who actually owns the team at this point. I mean, you've been around long enough that you remember when Glenn Taylor rescued the Timberwolves. Harv and Marv were selling them down the river. They were going to move to New Orleans, and somehow Glenn ends up keeping them around. Now, this has happened several times where he's pulled the plug on a deal at certain points. This one with Mark Laurie and A-Rod seems so far down the road, and then all of a sudden there's this terse two-paragraph statement of they blew it, they missed the deadline, I still own the team. You know Glenn, you know what makes him tick. How does this entire drama end?
I think ultimately, and now I know there's an arbitration process in place, and so that supposedly is going to have the final word. I still somehow can't see this getting resolved without intervention from the league. I do know Glenn. In fact, when he saved the Timberwolves from moving to New Orleans, he did it at just the right time because it looked like they were gone. I was covering that team. I went down to New Orleans to write several stories about the NBA returning to New Orleans, and I met my wife, the woman who would become my wife. And so instead of the team going all the way down the Mississippi, I brought her up to Mississippi, to Minneapolis, and had that deal never been flirted with, or if it had gone through more smoothly, that wouldn't have happened. So, you know, I do owe a debt of gratitude to that aborted transaction. This one, look, Glenn Taylor is an affable fellow. He comes across as this unexpected accidental billionaire from Mankato, Minnesota. He is a tough businessman, and I've got to think that he's got a fleet of attorneys that have combed through the documents and found loopholes that he believes will keep that team in his hands. I think it's driven by the change in the valuation of that team since that agreement was entered into. It's allegedly doubled in value, and he's locked into 2021 prices. And I think it's also related to the fact that the team's doing well now, and he is bankrolled that team for a long time, 20 years in between playoff series victories. And at 83, he wants to enjoy some of this. Now, why these guys, you know, can't work out a deal between them, I don't know. I understand. I mean, it's high finance and it's above my pay grade. For a lot of us, I mean, it's just buy popcorn and see multimillionaires or billionaires going against multimillionaires and billionaires. You know, I don't have an emotional favorite in this thing. You know, a deal's a deal. And yet there were clauses in there that there were certain deadlines that had to be met. I hear things on both sides. I don't think it's trickling down into the locker room or even the coaching ranks. I think that's so separate and for next season or beyond that it's not going to interfere with this postseason run. And then we'll see. I mean, we'll see in terms of what this team, based on where it finishes, has to do around the edges to improve, maybe go a step further. Maybe they won't have to go a step further. Maybe they'll be looking at defending and repeating.
Timberwolves Nuggets going to be a great series in the second round. That opens up on Saturday. Before we let you go, Ash, Eastern Conference right now, Porzingis gets knocked up. That would be a real story. Gets nicked up last night. I got caught between a couple of different words right there. Porzingis nicked up in that game. That one's going to make the rounds on social media. When you look at the East right now, if Porzingis has to miss any significant time, how does that, in your mind, impact the landscape of the East?
Well, I mean, the definition is significant. First of all, they have to put Miami down. I think Miami represents probably their biggest test over the next potential two series. I think that if they're playing the 4 or 5 winner, Cleveland or Orlando, and then ultimately the Knicks or the Pacers, then I think Boston would be in decent shape. I think they could beat those teams even if Porzingis was not available to them. Once you get into a final situation, whether it's Denver, Minnesota, I think that would be a real problem. So he's on the clock. He basically has until June 6th, which I believe is the start of the finals, to mend from this. And, you know, that's, what is that, about 5 weeks? So, you know, it's possible. I don't know the degree of the injury, but that's not as dire or urgent as needing him now. If Miami somehow gets back in this and stirs the ghosts from last spring, that could be a problem. But I think if Boston closes out the Heat, it won't be a crippling injury for the next two rounds.
Ash, you're the best. I had never heard that story about how you met your wife. Glad that, unlike Glenn Taylor, she didn't get all the way back there and then decide, you know what, deal's off. So thank you very much, man.
One of the previous co-owners, the guy that wanted to sell the team down there, when he found out what happened, he bought us the nicest wedding gift we got. Because I thanked him for
what
that
supported move. What was it?
Oh, it was this really nice silver platter that's stored away and you never use because you never had that kind of a party. But it was a nice gift, though. It was, you know, top of the line, Tiffany or something.
Ash, thanks a lot, man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, Tom.
That's Steve Ashford, NBA.com. I had no clue when I asked that question where we were going. That's one of the best stories I've ever heard. The Timberwolves are fun, man. You go back to that 04 team.
Fun.
And that was something. I grew up in Minnesota watching the Timberwolves. They started in 1989. And I was part of the Junior Wolves program where they were getting youth basketball going. And, you know, 97, they get in the playoffs for the first time. It was just loss, 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 loss. That 04 team that won a couple of series, they were exciting, but you also knew this is a one-off type of thing. It was Sam Cassell and Latrell Sprewell and Michael Olowokandi, and they tried to bring it back the following year, and it was a disaster. This team feels like it's got staying power with Anthony Edwards and Karl Anthony Towns, the ages that they're at. Rudy Gobert is playing the best defensive basketball he maybe has played in the course of his career. That series against the Nuggets is going to be very entertaining. All right, let's flip back to the NFL coming up after this. I know Brockman, I know TJ have a lot of questions for me. I'm going to try to answer them. Anything that happened in the draft, anything you guys want to know about, anything that anybody else wants to know about, 844-204-RICH. It's Tom Pelissero in for Rich on the Rich Eisen Show.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a
likelihood. So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
for you personally, you have an embarrassment of riches. You've got a beautiful family, a beautiful stadium. You're the guardian of the star. You've got a bust. You've got a Hall of Fame ring. You got a jacket. What you don't have is a fourth Lombardi trophy. How bad do you want it, Jerry Jones? How badly do you want this?
Well, Rich, like you said, you've been around for two decades now. Yes. And you haven't seen us raise that trophy. I did ask the man upstairs when I got the third one. I said, if you'll give me this one, I'll never ask again. Well, I'm asking. I'm trying to retrade that deal. And to the extent that he's listening to us, and I'm sure he is, I will do better. I've got some things that I could offer you to get that trophy. On the other hand, you know, that's why we're here. That's why I'm involved. Mm-hmm. A lot of people say and relate us to financial, but I was fortunate, lucky, and I had some resources, and I used it all to buy the Dallas Cowboys, every bit of it to buy the Dallas Cowboys.
I'm excited for this season. And on behalf of everyone in NFL Network, greatly appreciate your support for our network, for all from Jump Street to now, and then just for me personally, I want to thank you. I truly appreciate it.
Rich, I've watched you handle Michael Irvin and Deion Sanders. Anybody that can keep them in their place deserves to be the star of the network.
Jerry, I really appreciate that. That means a ton. Best to your family, and good luck over this for the season. We appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you, Rich.
You got it.
Thank
you, Rich. You got it. Right back at you. Thank you. That's Jerry Jones here.
Welcome back to the Rich Eisen Show. I am Tom Pelissero sitting in for Rich today. You can join us, 844-204-RICH is the phone number. Got a lot of great guests coming up through the course of the rest of this show. Dan Murphy from ESPN.com had that story with Pete Thamel today about potentially settlements of a lawsuit that could drastically change the landscape of college football and all college sports. Dan's going to join us shortly. Jarvis Landry, five-time Pro Bowl wide receiver, going to pop on as well as my buddy Ian Rappaport from NFL Network. Let's go call right now, though. Brandon in Wisconsin's been waiting quite a while. Brandon, it's Tom. What's up?
Tommy P, big pimpin', big pimpin'.
Let's go.
Appreciate it. What's going on, buddy?
How's it going, guys? Happy Tuesday.
What's up, brother?
So I was just calling to talk about my Bucks. I have been a Bucks fan for about 35 years now. Oof. And I remember the times of barely even reaching double-digit wins. And now we are just stuck in mediocrity. Is there what do we do?
TJ, I'm going to kick this one to you.
Man,
they're the three seed. They won the NBA title a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Brandon, you got your title. That's the
thing. I wouldn't
say
this is mediocrity. Mediocrity is 35 years of Timberwolves basketball with two series wins prior to a few days ago.
Yeah, the thing is,
we're not too far behind you on that Timberwolves.
But you got your title.
And the times of drafting Andrew Bogut, I mean, it's been pretty rough.
Andrew Bogut. That's a good reference right there.
You got your title and you got one of the five best players in the league. I mean, that's going to buy you at least some fun basketball here in the next 5-7 years.
It just seems like he's starting to break down here and there. And with the Dame Lillard acquisition, I'm just not sold. So I was just wondering what you guys think.
And you were hoping that was the missing piece, right? Dame didn't necessarily want to be there. He wanted to be in Miami. Didn't work out. They said, we're trading you for Portland to Milwaukee.
You change coaches not even halfway through the season. What were they? They won 31 games or something like that before.
They had a crazy record.
They had a great record. So now you've got to change your entire blueprint, right, in the middle of the season. That's tough in itself. And then, of course, Giannis goes down. That's almost a situation where you can't recover from. But, bro, you've got a solid team, and I mean solid in a good way, not the way Rich takes solid. You're just a piece or two away from being right back in the mix. I wouldn't worry, to be honest with you, man.
Who's the team that you fear in the East? Thank you very much, Brandon, for the call. I don't know that there's a singular team here that you're fearing to the degree that you don't think. Now, granted, they're down 3-1 to the Pacers right now. But if they're able to right the ship, I don't think you're sitting there going, well, they got no chance. If they sneak out of this series, they got no chance the next year. Who are you fearing?
No, they have a chance every year and in every series. You know, they're going to be in it. They're going to be one of the favorites, top five favorite every year as long as they have Giannis. So I think if you're a Bucks fan, you know, that's why you lift all them weights. That's why you waited the 30 years to get a guy like this, a generational player, a potential top 10 all-time player. Yep. And so you just ride this out. Is it enough to get you over the hump? I don't know, but you got your title. And that's more than just about every other team can say.
You got a new arena, you got stable ownership, you got a lot of things going for you. Yep. All right. NFL draft ended a few days ago. I was in Detroit the entire week. We're going to talk a lot about this throughout the course of the show, but I want to open up the floor to the fellas here in studio, TJ Jefferson, Chris Brockman. Just lay it on me here. We got about 7 minutes. Give me all you got. Any questions you have about the Cowboys or otherwise and what's going on?
Cowboys, go ahead, TJ, start.
You know, actually, because that's all I do is talk about the Cowboys, I want to get away from them a little bit. So wow. I'll ask you this.
Plot twist.
One of the guys who I feel we talked about yesterday should be mic'd up this entire season is Keon Coleman out of Florida State. But I'm wondering, did the Bills do enough to address their wide receiver situation after letting Diggs go and, you know, letting Gabe go?
I mean, I think a lot of people fixated on you have to get the receiver because you traded Stephon Diggs because you don't have Gabe Davis. They were quite possibly going to take Keon Coleman even if they stayed at 28. So to make a couple of trades, move down, end up with the same guy, you'd say that they got some value out of that situation. Absolutely. There's going to be a lot of people that are fixated on one of those trades allowed Xavier Worthy to go to Kansas City, your arch rival, and he could be the latest speedster who's torching you in the playoffs.
But I would end,
based on my understanding, I was going to the draft thinking, I'm not even certain that they're going to take a wide receiver. There are only certain guys that they thought were going to be fits for what they do. Keon Coleman, though, so he was on my first round surprise list because after he ran a 4.640 at the combine, everybody dropped him out. Right. When I talked to coaches and front office people, everybody said when you watch him play on tape, he's faster than that. Right. He was the fastest guy in the gauntlet drill at the combine, which is where you're running and there's a ball here and a ball here and you're going down. Yeah. The ball looks like it's coming in slow to his hands, like he sees it. The fast guy in that last year was Puka Nacua, who also ran a slow 40 and then went out and caught like 700 balls for the Rams in his rookie season. Keon Coleman was still training for basketball 2 years ago. He was on the Michigan State basketball team for Tom Izzo. So he hasn't filled out his body. He's like 6'3¼". He makes plays. It's a situation where I totally understood why Keon Coleman was the right guy for the Bills because they see a guy who can make an impact now but also has so much room to grow in the future. Was that the right one when you stack up that against Ladd McConkey, who the Chargers go and trade up to get, versus Xavier Worthy, versus the other receivers who are on the board in that general area? You can debate that. We don't know. Wide receivers are unpredictable always. But round one, round two, with Keon Coleman, I mean, he was the guy over Jaden Reed. Jaden Reed had a great first season for the Packers.
Right, sure did.
Again, he's not even fully focused on football until about a year and a half ago.
Is it true that he's the one that Josh Allen specifically wanted in this draft? I kind of heard that rumbling.
I mean, that's a good thing to say after the fact. I wouldn't be surprised if Josh Allen, I mean, again, he's a big receiver who can move. He's not a straight-up speed guy. But when have the Bills, you know, really focused on that type of a receiver for where they play, for the style of football they play? Like, yes, Stephon Diggs is a burner, but Diggs can be physical, and he's a technician. He's a really good route runner. You know, the straight speed guy, not that Xavier Worthy can't do other things, but I understood why Keon Coleman was the guy. Those players, though, are always, along with Xavier Leggett, the other receiver who went when they made that flop with Carolina at number 32.
Like should be mic'd up all season.
Those guys, yeah. Leggett, when I talked to him before the Senior Bowl, I mean, he is as South Carolina as it gets in terms of like this super thick accent, big smile on his face all the time. With him,
he's like a little DK Metcalf build too to him, right? He's a big kid.
Yeah, he's got probably more Debo because he's not as tall. He's not as tall as DK, but he's a big physical dude. The question is just, he was on campus for 5 years in South Carolina. How did he only have one season where he was in a factor on offense? He was playing special teams a couple of years ago.
Late
so
boomer.
How quickly can he pick up the NFL offense? What can you get out of him? Carolina, man, that draft, we haven't talked a whole lot because the Panthers were the worst team in the NFL last year. And unlike every other team that's the worst, they did not own the number one pick. They had already traded to Chicago. But the way that they navigated the draft board, it was all with the eye on let's go ahead and get Bryce Young some weapons here. So you jump up a spot and you get Legette. You trade down, but then you trade back up again to make sure you get Jonathan Brooks. You pick up a 2 next year to give yourself some more assets to build with. And then the top pick in the 4th round was Jatavion Sanders, I believe, the tight end from Texas. Another guy who people thought was going to go earlier. He ends up sliding down. I thought the Carolina, for what they had with limited resources in the draft, which I know is not where this question began, I thought that they made the most of what they did have on the board. Brockman, you got anything else?
Yeah, of course. Obviously, you want to talk Patriots. Was it always?
You veer away from the Cowboys. Brockman's still one track.
Yeah, because mind. You know what? Unlike TJ, I give the people what they want, and this is what they
we'll
want.
We'll get back to the Cowboys.
They want
don't
blatant
worry.
Homerism.
Was it I gave always, Hoskins what he wanted.
Was it always Drake May? What were they? Did they seriously entertain any offers? We know they did get the pick in pretty fast. It was 4 or 5 minutes into the 10 allotted, the pick is in. The graphic went up there. So was that always the move, Drake May?
I want to go through all the quarterback movement and how all that came to be a little bit later on. But for the Patriots specifically, it was pretty clear that if they stayed at 3, Drake May was going to be the guy. Once they knew Caleb was going 1 always, Jaden Daniels was probably going at 2. There was a chance something else could have happened, but it was probably going to be Jaden Daniels. Drake May fit. And when I talked to other people, I did that massive 13,000-word yep. quarterback story, talking to all the scouts and coaches. Everybody was connecting Drake May to the Patriots. Why? Number one, he needs time to develop. They got Jacoby Brissett, so he can start this year. He knows Jerod Mayo. It's going to be easy. Jacoby's a pretty good guy. It's not going to be something that, it's an issue with Drake May behind him. So you give him time. Number two, Drake May is a pretty big dude. He's well-built. He's a good athlete, but also just like he's taller in stature. Him playing in the AFC East, bad weather, Gillette Stadium, it makes sense. Like, he profiled like that type of guy. And the third reason is because there were big Michael Penix fans in this draft. Obviously, the Falcons were among them. There were really big fans as well of J.J. McCarthy. But basically, when you had people rank them, and I talked to dozens of people and had everybody kind of rank how they'd stack the quarterbacks, it was pretty close to an even split between Jaden Daniels and Drake May. Jaden Daniels, unbelievable playmaker. Some people think he's the most talented passer in the draft. Drake May, from a developmental standpoint, was somebody that a lot of teams had high.
Never seriously entertained trading out of that pick.
They absolutely entertained offers all the way up until the day before, the morning of. And they even got an offer when they were on the clock. I'll talk more about that later. Oh. They got an offer, one last Hail Mary effort while they're on the clock to try to get him to move. But they had already, I reported maybe 2-3 hours before the draft, it's all signs pointing to them taking the pick. But they absolutely were open to it. And I saw some people like reading into that's, well, they don't actually, they like, but they don't love the quarterbacks. No, it wasn't that. It was, hey, if somebody makes you a godfather type offer here and you need a ton of work on that roster, why would you not entertain it? Mm-hmm. I think that they were like a lot of teams where they liked J.J. McCarthy. They didn't like him at 3. They weren't going to do it there. They thought that the value, the upside on Drake May was higher, whereas J.J. McCarthy might have a higher floor. Because Drake May, from that North Carolina offense, it's the most dumbed down, simplistic type of thing. All those North Carolina quarterbacks who come in, it's this massive leap. And there's no reason to think Drake May doesn't have the aptitude for it or the work ethic or any of those things. It's just he's not close to being ready to play. J.J. McCarthy, he threw the ball, 4 times a game at Michigan, but he operated under center. He called plays in the huddle. He ran a pro-style offense. You feel like he's probably closer to being able to do the things that you do, or at least there's evidence on tape of him doing them. I will talk more draft with Ian Rappaport later on. I will talk through all the quarterbacks, how they landed with their teams in the draft. But after this, Dan Murphy, ESPN.com. Is the landscape of college sports about to shift? We'll talk with him next.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.